This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
Do you actually need a camera for tout, or is it like part of the program?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
I'm just kidding. The man you see and the place to be.
Do you listen at all when I speak on the show?
I'm not the one who thrives on whining about carriages that are 3 inches from my fucking car.
So if it's too much for you and your big cock of the walk Knight to Columbus fat cat,
when does it end, JR?
Bring the carriage back to the fucking thing, then what do you want? What do you want?
When does it end?
You're making the poor guy making minimum wage while you're sitting there with our mento going through the coffers.
Party people in the place to be.
5 years. 5 years we've been doing podcasts, and we have this is trash.
It's not Austin in LA, it's not Cabana in Chicago, it's not Conrad down in Alabama. Place to Be Nation presents Scott Criscolo and JT Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. Episode 551 inside the PTBN studios. Joining me, as always, is my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. As my PIC stated, this is the longest-running episodic motherfucking gold standard, and it is 49 to 6 Bills. Are we into summer, JR? Can we say it's officially warm? It's
not that yeah.
I think spring it's, leftover thing anymore.
I think so. The pollen's finally dead, hopefully, so.
Yeah, mold. Ugh. How are you? Always good to be with you.
Oh yeah, doing all right.
Good. Ready to good. Children are well.
Yeah, they're okay.
They're there.
Yeah, whatever.
Hashtag FKM. Whatever you guys say, FTM. Good to have a good episode tonight, as we always done since this project that we started from January of 85, when we get this November glug of shows all in a row. We have another one this evening, pretty good one. And with this brand of show, JR, why don't we bring in our third member of the Trident?
Okay, he is the host of Greetings from Allentown. He's the co-host of the Adams Division podcast, Mr. Peter Winston. Peter, how are you?
I am doing great. It's June 15th. It's one of my favorite days on the calendar. It's the day the Bruins won the Stanley Cup in 2011. But more importantly, today is Wade Boggs' 62nd birthday, and I'm celebrating it by drinking less than Wade's average consumption of 62 Miller Lights right now.
Are you eating?
He's got one.
Are you eating fried chicken and banging Susan Wallman as well?
Banging Susan Wallman.
I did have chicken for dinner tonight, so I have it lined up. Of course, it was with like chickpeas and some sort of weird hot sauce, so maybe not the lemon chicken that he would always have before every game, doing his warm-ups at 7:17, all the other little stuff. Although I do have a routine for the podcast when I'm on the Place to Be podcast, but I'm not going to divulge everything. I'm very superstitious about that.
Oh, well, yeah, probably for the best. You keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
All right, Scott, we're continuing along one steady weekend worth of shows here. Actually a week-long festivities, really. We did the Survivor Series Showdown. That would have been on Sunday, I believe. We did Survivor Series, which would have been Thursday. And now we are a night after Survivor Series.
We are indeed. It is the main event, the fourth ever of the, not Saturday nights, but the main event. So the date is November 23rd, 1990. We are from, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere tonight. We're not even close to where, I mean, not that they're live, but of course, last night's Survivor Series in Hartford. On this night, the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Let's see when we taped this. Couldn't have been that far back. I'll take a look and see when we taped it. Was it?
It was in October, Scott. Believe it or not.
Yeah, you might be right. Actually, let me go back a little bit. Well, while we're going, I'll look it up while we're going over it. But on this evening, of course, everybody dispersed from Hartford and went to their separate loops. One loop was at Rosemont Horizon, where last year's Survivor Series was. Rosemont Horizon in suburban Chicago. Here is your card. Saba Simba pinned Tom Stone. Dustin Rhodes pinned Buddy Rose. The Warlord pinned Jimmy Snuka. Tugboat pinned Dino Bravo. I don't know why I'm laughing at that.
At least he pinned him.
Yeah, at least he pinned him. The Big Boss Man pinned the Big Boss Man defeated Mr. Perfect and Bobby Heenan in a handicap match. Earthquake defeated Hulk Hogan via countout following a brawl on the floor. After the match, Hogan was taken backstage on a stretcher. And your Intercontinental Champion, Kerry Von Erich, fought Mr. Perfect to a double disqualification. So Perfect had to do double duty that night. The other half of the roster was at the Joyce Athletic and Convocation Center, of course, on the campus of the University of Notre Dame in South Bend. Here's your card. Davey Boy Smith defeated Haku. Of course, JR, you and I had that awesome match at the Garden between those two. One half of your World Tag Team Champions, Bret Hart, defeated The Barbarian. Sergeant Slaughter defeated Jim Duggan. Ted DiBiase defeated Dusty Rhodes. Randy Savage, the Macho King, defeated your World Champion Ultimate Warrior via countout. Black Bart defeated Battle Cat. That's right up in Allentown Alley right there. Rick Martel defeated Jake Roberts via disqualification. And in the main event, the Legion of Doom defeated the now axeless Demolition of Smash and Crush.
I like that Black Bart versus Battle Cat had to go on after Warrior Savage.
I know, right? Need a cool down there. Oh, geez. So I'm trying to think, JR. Well, I guess they didn't broadcast the title change. I think we talked about this, right, on the last episode. They didn't broadcast the title change till December or something. So technically, Kerry Von Erich is still your Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah, it was on Superstars in December. So yeah, this whole weekend, he's still with the belt, even though it had already been filmed. Just like this whole episode was filmed as a 90-minute, you know, we've talked about this, a 90-minute special meant to air on this date. A few days after it was taped, NBC canceled that Saturday Night's Main Event, gave them a 60-minute spot instead, and then that allowed them to call out the Hearts versus Rockers title change due to the rope break, and they cut it down to about 40 minutes to air here in prime time the night after Thanksgiving, which is a pretty big slot for them. So it's an interesting weekend for sure. As we always have also talked about, no Herb Coons notes this week and for the next few. Sadly, he's off for a bit here until January. So I think the next show we'll have any Herb will be the Rumble. So we get a few between then here and then a couple of house shows. But Peter, any recollection or comment on any of the recent Herb notes from past episodes that you haven't been on?
I try to retain the information that Herb is giving to me, but after that one marathon session that I was on, I think it was the July Saturday Night's Main Event, all I could ever think of is Larry Cameron. Every single time Herb says something, I'm waiting for like Larry Cameron to make it appear. That in the CNWA.
Oh, he loves that CNWA.
CNWA. So just to confirm, and we probably mentioned it, the date was October 30th. Was the date of
that's too far back. Like the way I judge it is, if you buy a carton of milk on the day that it's taped, is it still going to be viable out of the fridge when the show airs? And you're not keeping milk for 3.5 weeks. I'm sorry, even in time of COVID.
A little chunky, like,
freezing. Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah. So this is almost a month old.
Yeah, that's about as moldy as it gets in this stretch. I don't think they go too much longer than that.
No, probably not. I mean, they got lucky in this case because they had time to, you know, hack out the title, the tag thing and NBC's shit and all that kind of stuff. So it made sense that they had some time.
All right, so let's head back into prime time, the fourth time, like you said, the night after the pay-per-view, night after Thanksgiving. Mean Gene is with Ted DiBiase cackling away as Gene recaps all the cruel things Ted has done with his money over the years. Ted said, "Is the bottom line, he's rich. in ring prowess, technical skill, and wrestling ability. It all comes down to money being the only thing, and everybody has a price. A really basic promo to get over Ted to this new potential audience, as always, that they try and do on these shows on NBC, assuming that, you know, could be a first-time viewer checking in here. Sean Moody's out the Ultimate Warrior, says all the money in the world can buy the world title, but money doesn't build biceps. It's the power of the Warriors flowing through him. That cannot be bought. His bottom line is sacrifice, and he wonders what Ted is willing to give up. If everyone has a price, what price is Ted willing to pay? That's just a good serious Warrior promo for a change. He seems very locked in. What did you guys think of both of these?
Well, I disagree with the notion that money can't buy biceps. I think Dr. George Zaharian would also agree at that point. But what was interesting to me about these callbacks with Ted is they were going back to like 87 and 88 for the treacherous stuff that he did.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of weird for a company that was loath to acknowledge history. It's like the most recent thing that they talked about was like over 2 years before this.
Yeah. Right.
I think it was the twin referee thing. And then, of course, look who's the referee when we get to the match. It's so fucking unbelievable, this company.
And normally they wouldn't care because you'd never hear it again. And then they actually show the clip of the two Hebners standing with Hogan. And then the next thing you know, he's standing there next to fucking Ted in the ring. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous.
It's like so ludicrous. It really is.
Yeah, they're definitely amping up quite a bit on rehashing how evil DiBiase is with his money, how abusive he is, because that's obviously going to be going somewhere, as we'll see play out. But, they really are starting to refocus on that after kind of, I don't want to say letting it go for a bit. It's always been about his money and being cruel, but they're really kind of revisiting his history of it. And as he gets more and more abusive here in the coming weeks, we get our opening animation. Vince McMahon and Roddy Piper welcome us in to set the night up. Piper is leading Leftover Turkey, makes a joke about Roseanne Barr. And that brings us to our opening match, which is the Ultimate Warrior defending his World Wrestling Federation Championship belt against Ted DiBiase. Big main event out of the gate. Warrior charges down like a maniac to a big pop, shows off his power early, chucking Ted around the ring. Ted comes chopping back. Warrior swats him off and drives him to the floor with a clothesline. Piper says Warrior needs to pay attention to Virgil, and right on cue, he clangs their heads together and smacks them both to the floor. Warrior shoves Ted inside, nails him with a double axe handle. Ted begs off. Warrior keeps bringing the heat right at him until he eats a knee on a charge. Ted lands a clothesline. He's off and running, hitting a double axe off the middle rope. Warrior blocks a pile driver with a backdrop, hits a pair of shoulder blocks, but he gets tangled with Virgil, and Ted knocks him to the floor. After the break, Ted's in control, working a side headlock. Keeps slugging away, but drops his head on a whip. Warrior gets a near fall on a backside. Ted pops up and lands some shots and a nice vertical suplex. Warrior gets a flash 2 on a sunset flip, and it's cool seeing Warrior get these unusual pin attempts, trying to mix it up. Ted chucks him back outside, spikes him to the steps. Back inside, he hammers away. Warrior blocks a suplex and gets one of his own. Vince has the technical skill we thought we'd see from Ted. Warrior's doing and vice versa with the roughhouse tactics. We get a huge, loud shoulder block collision, and both guys collapse. They both get up, and DiBiase's hammering away, but Warrior fires up and starts to clobber Ted with punches, shoulder blocks, and clotheslines. Nails a flying tackle. It covers, but in comes Virgil for the DQ. I did not like this finish. I don't see why we're protecting DiBiase, especially when Warrior, you know, badly needs a win over a quality guy. It made no sense to protect him here. Warrior destroys Virgil till Macho King comes in and maniacally beats down Warrior with his scepter. It's a wild attack, a really cool moment as Warrior struggles to his feet and holds the title high. Perhaps the best he's looked since Mania overall. Like, he looked relatable, he looked realistic, and he's kind of entering into this blood feud now with Savage. It was a fine match. I liked Warrior varying his offense. It was hard hitting, some good strikes and collisions. The finish again was lame. Warrior needed that big win, so that dropped the score for me a bit, but I love the Savage attack as he ramps his way up being top contender again. Sky went 2.5 stars on this.
I went 2.5 stars as well. Your match time, 9:47. And I agree. Why are we not giving, I mean, he's been champion now for 7, 8 months now. Why is he not just getting clean pins? It's DiBiase. He's lucky he even got a title match. We've talked numerous times, JR, in the last several shows that DiBiase is no longer main event material anyway. So why is he getting protected when he's not even going to probably get another title shot again ever? I thought that part was garbage. The match itself is really good. I enjoyed it. I was so pumped during the Savage beatdown. He was a maniac, choking and he was throwing refs, and I mean, he was vintage, not to quote Michael Cole, vintage savage. I mean, he's hitting him in the gut. He's hitting him in the face. He's choking him. Typical great savage. It was, you know, after, and no disrespect to Dusty, kind of glad that feud's finally done. And Savage really needs to get back into the swing of things. We need some hot heels at the top, and Savage is one right now. So I enjoyed, Peter, the brawl. The match was fine. As JR said, I kind of like the variety of pinfalls. But why are we protecting a guy who hasn't had a title shot in ages? Probably didn't deserve one to begin with, but he was in the building that night, so let's give him one. Yeah, I don't understand it. But overall, the match was fine, but the ending sucked, and the brawl was awesome. Or the heel attack at the end was awesome.
I will defend their protecting DiBiase, because his character is like a Swiss Army knife. With the way he can throw around money, you can kind of explain anything at any time. And, you know, you could throw him into that. It's like, well, maybe he bought his way to the title shot. I mean, who really knows? That's the beauty of Ted DiBiase's character. Now, when I looked at the schedule for this show, and like, oh, Ted versus Warrior, oh god, another Warrior match, as we know, I am no fan of his, and I'm like, ugh. But I actually really like this, and the spirit of Jesse Ventura came over me during the Warrior going for the backslide and the sunset flip. All I could think of was Jesse marveling over Hacksaw Jim Duggan doing a sunset flip at WrestleMania 4. I can't believe the Ultimate Warrior did a wrestling move. And at that point, I thought to myself, this is actually pretty good. I'm rather enjoying this Ultimate Warrior match. Until I realized that the Warrior's face paint would wear off so much faster than other guys who wore face paint. I think he needed to get like a new supplier or something. Because
he just went down to like Spirit Halloween and made a purchase and that was it?
I think he was cheaping out, because you never saw that kind of stuff with like Sting or either, you know, the Hawk, Animal, Demolition. Like, their paint wouldn't wear off quite as fast as Warrior. And I think it was the quality of the product that he was getting. Now, I agree with you that it was a weak-ass run-in by Virgil. In fact, it was so piss poor. I'm sure that when DiBiase saw the tape, he was like, I'm going to start abusing this motherfucker like right now. But I was with you guys with 2.5 stars, but I gave it 3 stars because, holy, the post-match here is so great. First of all, Virgil has such an ample hog that the Warrior can do the press slam on him and grab onto it. It still has plenty of slack left over so that Virgil isn't too bothered by it. It's not like his whole hand, you know, would cover the whole limp penis or anything. It furthers the storyline of Ted DiBiase and Macho Man being best friends secretly. But the way Savage just goes at him is it's just incredible. What an absolute he is Mr. Saturday Night's Main Event, like I've always said. And I do think that the run-in by Savage should have been the finish. Because he moves at 100 miles an hour. It's like, yeah, I could see him already running down there, and you could time it so that he would get in there before, you know, to break up the pin. But my other comment is, holy shit, is Jay Strongbow fat? Oh my god, like I'm surprised there aren't like moons orbiting his like waistband. He's got to be like a 66 inch waist in there. I mean, it was absolutely disgraceful. I wish Gorilla Monsoon was there to remind us how fat Jay Strongbow got.
That's right.
Vince was laying it on pretty thick in the aftermath, but the Warrior showing vulnerability was something different. And because of all that, I give it 3 stars because Randy Savage enhances everything, including stuff he's not even technically a part of.
He was awesome here. Yeah. It was a great beatdown. Had a great attack. And he needs the rehabbing. I mean, we've talked about it. He's kind of spent most of 90 in the feud with Dusty. He got whiffed for the first half of it. And then even the back half where he kind of got over, it was thanks to DiBiase's help. And I know this pushes forward your theory that DiBiase and Savage are in cahoots, Peter, and they have been for a while because they work again together here. But he really needs this kind of dominant performance, and they're building him up. They're giving him the build that they didn't give Rude in earlier in the year to establish him as dominant, right? Warrior beat Rude by count out. Rude never really got over on Warrior heading into SummerSlam. Whereas here, we're already seeing Savage landing his big blows and becoming a threat to Warrior.
Yeah. And the other thing that makes no sense is in the post interview. Well, actually, you'll probably mention the Savage interview when you do that. Then I'll make my comment. But yeah, it helped Savage certainly more than it helped Warrior, and DiBiase is just kind of there. But yeah, after you mention this next interview, then I'll make my point because it kind of goes with it. So.
All right. Well, the next point is that Randy Savage and Satishal Sherry are with Mean Gene. Savage tells him to shut up. He accepted DiBiase's royal payment, and this wasn't about economics. It's about the feeling he had when a scepter made contact with Warrior. He would have done that for free. Everything he did was feeling great inside. The best feeling will be when the bell rings and when Savage is crowned the new WWF champion. I thought this was great. Randy Savage promo work, as always.
The promo was awesome, but here's the illogic. Here's the lack of logic of the finish. If you were being paid off by DiBiase, then why are you coming in after the DQ had happened? You're not even making any fucking sense. So Virgil does a weak-ass shitbag DQ, and you're paying Savage to help you, but the match is already over.
Maybe he got Papa Shango'd. And,
yes.
It was a delayed steal. I don't know.
And it makes no sense. He talks about DiBiase paying him to help the match, but the match is already over. So what did Virgil... going to business for himself? I don't know. I just had to make that point because it really annoyed me that, you know, Savage, and it's not Savage's fault. The promo's still awesome. But he makes a point to say that DiBiase's paying him off, and he comes and runs and beats Warrior down, and the match is already over. And obviously Savage wants the title himself, so why are we helping DiBiase in the first place? I don't know. This whole thing made no sense, but it's a good promo.
All right.
Everything can be explained by DiBiase's money. If something doesn't make sense money. In a DiBiase angle, just explain it with money.
Yeah. All right. Gene is backstage with Sergeant Slaughter and General Adnan. Sarge says, to hell with Nikolai Volkov and Old Glory. The only flag that he salutes is the Iraqi flag, the banner of the brave Iraq nation, and his commander, General Adnan. They believe that if you want something, you reach out and take it, and because nobody has the guts to stand in their way, that is what's wrong with America. No guts, no glory. Adnan rants from there. All right, let's head to the ring for Nikolai Volkov taking on Sergeant Slaughter. Here we go again, this never-ending feud, and has to be the blow-off for this angle, hopefully. Volkov standing around waving the flag as Sergeant Adnan stalk out. Adnan blocks the ref as Sarge batters Nikolai with his riding crop, hooks him in the Kemba clutch before the bell even rings. The crowd fires up a USA chant. Sarge continues to beat the shit out of Nikolai, spitting on him. Duggan eventually comes out to a pop and cleans house. And really no match here. Just completely just ends up being an angle to, I guess, transition us from Slaughter versus Nikolai to Slaughter versus Duggan. Peter, what'd you think of this?
Did we really need two commercial breaks during the intro right. for this match? I felt like I was watching Raw in like more modern times. But there is a little bit of comedy involved here because Volkov not being able to get the satin jacket off, it reminded me of a National League pitcher running the bases. That's pretty much the stage of Volkov's career we're in at this point. But the other thing that amused me somewhat is our referee for what was going to be this bout was Danny Davis. And he looks like a complete idiot, imbecile, whatever, because he's just kind of standing there like waving his arms like a jackass. And it made me wonder, could he wrestled for over 2 years. Could he not like take a bump? Like, why can't Slaughter just send him out over the top to like help explain all this? Like, I found the whole thing highly dubious. Like, it could have been done a little bit better. I mean, did you wonder that, Scott, or were you not paying attention to Davis?
Well, it is Danny Davis. No, yeah. It did seem a little strange. I think that's the whole – what I think is like erasing Danny Davis's wrestling career.
Oh, yeah, they pretty much act like he's a completely different person for the most part.
We were talking about – it's like you were saying earlier, Peter, about how are we mentioning things that DiBiase did, you know, WWF's mentioning history further back than a month ago. And now we're supposed to remember that Danny Davis actually was a wrestler in terrible referee pants. But this whole thing's a mess. Why are we still – I mean, Nikolai – you could tell how they care about this feud. Nikolai doesn't even get a fucking promo. Not that he would say anything of note probably anyway at this point. But this card as well – well, I shouldn't say that because the last match is good. But, I mean, this card obviously – and they even mentioned it on Survivor Series last night. This was all about the DiBiase Warrior title match and pretty much nothing else. So yeah, I mean it's a real mess. If they're gonna make any care about Slaughter, they need to, you know, get him out of this shit feud. So at least with Duggan, you got somebody with a little more some more teeth to the crowd. But yeah, as far as we're supposed to know, Peter, Danny Davis is a brand new referee that just debuted. Never saw him before ever.
I am curious. Do they ever reference him as being like his past at all? Like, I'm sure some house show somewhere, Gorilla probably fucking brings it up. But
after WrestleMania 5, he was in the ring refereeing again, and Gorilla, I think it was on Challenge, because Gorilla made a brief, maybe it was Superstars, who knows, but make a very brief reference, like, yeah, he's back, and he didn't use the word double secret probation, but it was basically sort of implied as such.
But that was recent after it. I mean, like, in later years, like, did they ever go back and bring it up? I mean, WrestleMania 5, he had just pretty much been reinstated, so.
Yeah, they just kind of brought it up that one time, like, all right, he's back as a referee now, and then never acknowledge it again. But I'm sorry, 11-year-old me had a long memory, even though I'm not 11 watching it now, so. I only feel 11.
You were not happy. Not happy at all.
Yeah.
No. 11th lemon chicken.
All right, well, guess what? Nikolai Volkov gets a beating put on him again, and I think this is pretty much it. So I don't think we see him again in front of the year or so. He pops back in for a hot minute. So that's it. It's been an eventful turn for Nikolai. They tried, God bless him. They tried to give him something with this face turn. It was doomed to fail. It was never going to click. In the end, he ends up just being low-level fodder for Slaughter to move on from. And I think it's a natural progression when you kind of look at the types of guys Slaughter be going after, the real strong pro-Americana dudes. So he takes out Nikolai, now he's on to Duggan, and then you can kind of project where he's headed from there. So I guess the climb makes sense. Me and Gene backstage with the Big Boss Man, he says, Bobby Heenan did his mama wrong, he'll get his revenge on him, and no Heenan family member can prevent punishment. Justice will not be blind. And that brings us to our Intercontinental title match tonight, as the Big Boss Man challenges Mr. Perfect. Perfect is out solo as Vince McMahon, Piper talk about a new diet we'll learn about later. Bossman gets a warm welcome as he hits the ring looking for revenge. Perfect bails as he slides in. Vince has Bobby shaking in his boots wherever he is. We get some feeling out until Perfect slaps Bossman, then dodges a charge, slugs him in the chin, bails outside. Piper says he tried to bait Bossman into making a mistake. Bossman chases him down and just snaps him to the floor by his hair. Back inside, Perfect does a cartwheel to dodge Bossman. Bossman cuts him down with a clothesline. Bossman's wrecking Perfect here, whipping him hard to the corner twice. He drags Perfect by his hair, sends him careening into the post, nuts first. Bossman follows with a backbreaker, heads up top, but whiffs on a splash. Perfect lays in a stiff kick to the gut, zeroes in the lower back. Perfect gets a neat inside cradle for two, and then Mailey stays in with the strikes, picking up near falls. Bossman comes slugging back into things, beels Perfect across the ring. Bossman rattles the neck and just punches him to the mat. Perfect reverses a whip while Bossman hits the quarter hard as Vince talks about how Bossman's mom has suffered. Heenan comes out and Vince and Piper are shocked he had the guts to show up. Perfect lays in some stiff chops, but Bossman comes firing back as we get into a slugfest. Perfect hits the Perfect Plex. Bossman blows out of it, which is a big moment. And between the last two nights, that move has taken some dings. Warrior kicked out of it clean at Survivor Series. Bossman here tonight. Bobby hooks the top rope, but Bossman reverses a whip and Perfect flies to the floor. Bossman grabs Bobby, but Bobby wiggles free and runs away. Bossman chases him, and by the time he gets back, he's already been counted out. We get a clip of Bobby running backstage, and he takes this amazing pratfall in the hallway. He goes flying. Perfect books it as Bossman comes back. A really fun match, even with the second fuck finish of the night. This would at least make sense. They're kicking off the feud of Bossman trying to mow through the Heenan family, and this is the big kind of the big boss. So he gets a shot at him, but he doesn't finish him off, so he'll have to go keep chasing him. More hard-hitting offense, a good back-and-forth pace. Bossman, I thought, was super impressive with the speed and energy. Perfect did the usual Perfect stuff, too. I thought it was a good bout, Scott. I went 3 stars. I enjoyed it. It's kind of the forgotten Bossman Perfect match.
I agree. Just a clarification, JR, this was not an IC title.
Oh, it was non-title. That's right. Well, yeah. Yes, that's right.
Well, he doesn't have the belt yet. So.
Yes.
Yeah. I liked it. I mean, this is where you start to really see that Bossman's doing his best to, try to keep up with the other athletic guys in the company. Your time is, of course, the Slaughter had no time. 8:15 for this one, so not bad for a Saturday's main event match, or a main event match, I should say, or an NBC show match. Usually don't get one this long. Nice job by Bossman to kind of – kind of reset the feud, excuse me, during his promo with Rude gone, kind of resetting the promo and putting all of it on Bobby. So that was smart, particularly for this crowd who obviously, you know, when we're watching mainstream shows like they did in the beginning, you know, you kind of got to reset things for the audience if they're not in the know. But I enjoyed the match. It was a lot of fun. I knew it was going to be clean, and I, you know, Perfect and Boss Man's paths will cross again down the line. But overall, Peter, pretty solid match. What are your thoughts on the match and on Boss Man kind of trying to, you know, really hang with the athletic workers in the company as his face turn kind of really kicks into gear?
Boss Man was cutting weight like crazy after after he became a face. Like, I don't know what that was about, but maybe
well, he's on
was...
Hogan's workout promo program now that they're buddies. So,
right. Well, one thing that I noticed is that he had his shirt unbuttoned to the navel, literally. Yeah. Like he's gonna go, like he's gonna go work the crowd at Studio 54, and you know, hold court with Capote and the rest of them. But he was being billed at what 360 as a heel, something like that, and now he's down to like 310, and he can move around like crazy, and maybe not obviously doesn't have the speed of Curt Hennig, but can keep up with him. Which makes this better. I do wonder why are mother insults so bad? I mean, I was in middle school at the time. If people flipped out like the Boss Man did about mother jokes, like it would basically be like Watts 1965 in my middle school at all times.
Anarchy.
Like that's exactly what it would have been. I know that we now live in an age where, you know, a lot of nostalgia Twitter accounts, we get the stuff from Mongo and for Meng and for all these different guys. But can somebody just do a Twitter account with every single Heenan mother joke that he told about the Boss Man's mother? I mean, all you need is about 20 seconds for each clip, and you probably got about 100 of them. You know, so it's enough material. But Perfect is such a smart heel. I love watching him. He does that great spot where he kind of falls backwards towards the ring post and then sort of slides and then ends up crotching himself, which, you know, hurts because, you know, you could definitely see like his dick outline. Curt Hennig was positioning his hog in a very certain way in order to enhance what he knew he was presenting to a national audience. Anyway, I'll try and clean this up. I thought it was a pretty neat finish with Heenan. I mean, God, Heenan's so great. Like he always
amazing.
Knows to do like the near slip and fall, but like, you know, don't actually fall, but it's still funny. And then Boss Man can't get back in time, so he loses by count out. And what a neat finish that speaks to some 2020 issues. Boss Man, a man of the law, trying to use force on Perfect, who didn't really do much of anything to him. His issue's more with Heenan than anything else. I gave it two and a half stars. So it was pretty good. Not as much of a screwed up finish as what we might see from them later.
right. Yeah, and it continues. The mother feud never made sense to me. It did seem really weak overall. I know it was trying to get Boss Man to the feud with Rude. But there had to be a better way. They really, I mean, I don't blame Rude for leaving, honestly. When you look at what they did to him at 90, he really, I mean, he has the throwaway match with Snuka, gets treated like shit in this feud with Warrior, and then this next feud is around insulting Big Boss Man's mother. The whole thing is just not the great use of him.
When you said the mother feud, I thought maybe they should have brought in Glenn Danzig to accompany Boss Man instead of Andre at 7, but I don't know. Every other celebrity was at WrestleMania 7 in the crowd. Why not Glenn Danzig
sitting next to Macaulay Culkin?
You mean that youngster?
That youngster. Yes.
All right. Why don't we take a break? We're amazingly halfway through the show already. It's a quick one. Just got a little bit more to go. We come back, we'll tackle that. We will get our Scott Criscola Pop Culture Corner, do our awards, and get out of here.
But you know, you always keep moving. No, he's never gonna stop moving, 'cause he's rolling, he's the rolling stone. When you wake up, it's a new morning, the sun is shining, it's a new morning, you're going, you're
Hello, everybody. This is Bruno Lauer. I'm on The Place to Be. You're listening to The Place to Be podcast. You know why? Because it's like Mama says, it be that way sometimes.
All right, nation, welcome back to episode 551 of the Place to Be podcast, covering the main event from November 23rd, 1990. As we whittle our way down to the end of the year, we're going to first tell you what's going on in the world of Place to Be Nation. On this very network here, the PTBN Wrestling Feed, Chris Zellner, Devin Hales have your Backlash 2020 review. Another of the newest shows on this feed is Wrestling's Chicken Salad, where Ben Locke is joined by Logan Crossland and Sean Kidd, going over a myriad of perceived bad pay-per-views of wrestling history. This debut episode recaps the 1991 Great American Bash. On the latest NWA Saturday special, Scott, you and Dr. G, joined by Callum McDougall, to begin a series on NWA's Mount Rushmore, discussion on Harley Race. Sure, check that out as you work your way through your GWCW project.
Yep.
Another new show on the feed, Highway to the Impact Zone, Logan Crossland, Jacob Williams, starting the Impact Era of TNA with guests Sean Kidd and Lewis Maynard for the Maiden Flight, looking at the last weekly pay-per-view of the pre-Impact Era, number 97. And in the newest senior video, Rory McNamara, Cal McDougall go over the epic Rampage 92 Coliseum Home video from beginning to end. Also, be sure to check out the PlayStation Pop feed. Great shows, including the Glenn Butler podcast star Spectacular. Let me try that again. Spectacular. Diamond Conversations. It was a thing on TV the year Pop. Laugh in Theater, a great debate, a piece of the action, and so much more. Subscribe today. And while you're there, subscribe to another pair of tremendous podcast feeds. First off is Jennifer Smith's Jenny Position, the home of Geek and Sassy Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast, and The Journey Through Infinity, Scott, that features me and you, along with Jenny and Tim Capel, going through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So be sure to check that. I believe we're through, Thor?
Thor Dark, the Dark World.
Dark World, Dark Planet, whatever some may call it. That is the most recent to drop, so be sure to check out the feed as those continue to hit. Also, you can check out the North-South Connection Network, brought to you by myself, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George, the home of Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, and so much more. And be sure to check out the episode of Wrestling Warzone chronicling WrestleMania 12 that dropped a couple weeks ago. I thought it was the best Chad and I have done. I really enjoyed that look at the show. We dove about as deep as possible into that show. So hopefully everyone checks it out and enjoys it. We've also officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have until New Year's Eve to do your research, promote your matches, and build your list. Conversation and rules found out at facebook.com/GWCWmatches or the Pro Wrestling Only message board. And of course, follow our social media pages for the latest in tournament action and articles that are going up as well. Trent SmackDown on Fox Report, The Weekend OD by John Crow, Polly's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion. And don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Weekly Walk Around the Web. If you're doing online shopping at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right-hand side of the PlayStation homepage or use PlayStation.com/Amazon. To do some shopping with no additional cost to you. You know, it's funny because we talked about Virgil costing DiBiase that match earlier, and you wonder why he's kind of stuck with him this long. Yeah, he gets the job done most of the time. He also fails a lot for him. But I guess there's something deep in DiBiase's heart for Virgil, a soft spot that he keeps him around, continues to pay him and support him, and deal with the minimal work, minimal success, I should say, that the hard work puts in. Also in his heart was likely The Groove, because that was the number 4 song in the countdown this week. Delight's Groove is in the Heart, which brings us into Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. You may breathe now. And speaking of tournaments, at the end of the program, we will announce the next tournament topic that Mr. Atherton will be debuting on the tournament Facebook page. So we'll make that announcement at the end of the program. With this, yes, we're not going to beat the billboard. We've already beat this billboard list to death, so we just wanted to use Delight because it's a great song. Movies we won't do because same movies we did for the last episode. So why don't we just dive right in?
because we've digested the turkey from the previous week, and take the field.
All right, it is indeed time for the pick'em. I always tell myself I'm going to add the numbers up, but I did it quick. And I believe I am down by 5 to our guests. I have 43 correct answers. And our guests have 48, as usual. D'Amato put the beating on me in our last episode, 1-4. So that's really created the separation here that was 1 for a while. So, Peter, as we did in 1989, John laid the death blow, and then you finished me off. So let's see if that's the route we go again.
Yeah, okay. And the thing, again, the advantage for you, JR, is trailing. You get plenty of opportunities because we have so many shows in this specific weekend that our next show in 2 weeks will go to the following weekend's game. So you got plenty of opportunities to get back into it. So we obviously did this current weekend last week with or 2 weeks ago with D'Amato in the last episode. So we will go ahead a week to the weekend of December 2nd and 3rd, so week 13 of the 1990 NFL season. Let us begin at the Dog Pound in Cleveland, where the Browns, we host the last team to play in Cleveland, the now Los Angeles Rams, JR.
I will take the Browns.
Yeah, Brownies.
Brittany Kozar throws for 281, but the Rams win comfortably, 38-23. Let's go to Soldier Field in Chicago, where the Detroit Lions travel to take on the Chicago Bears, Peter.
Bears.
The Bears.
It had to go to overtime, but the Bears win it 23-17.
Hey, Scott, can I ask you something? How many more of these are we doing?
Well, two? Probably two.
Okay. I just want to know how risky I got to be here tonight. That's all.
Yeah, well, we'll have one in 2 weeks, and then I think we have a December house show, and I think the season's still. So you'll have two more chances.
Okay. I'll still play it kind of safe then tonight.
All right, so we go to Rich Stadium in Buffalo, where the Bills host the Philadelphia Eagles, JR.
I'll take the K-Gun.
Yeah, Bills.
Jim Kelly throws for 334. Bills win 30-23. Let's go to RFK Stadium in our nation's capital, where the Redskins host the Miami Dolphins, Peter.
I'll go with the Washington professional football team.
Fuck. Yeah, all right, me too.
The Skins de Rojo. Mark Rippon throws for 245. Redskins win 42-20. Let's go to the Big Sombrero in Tampa. The Bucks hosting the Atlanta Falcons, JR.
I'll take the Falcons on the road.
I'll go with Tampa Bay.
Future New York Jet. Vinny Testaverde throws for 351 yards. Bucks win 23-17.
Oh, wow.
Let's go to Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh. The Steelers host the Cincinnati Bengals, Peter.
Oh, boy, this pains me, but I'll have to pick Steelers.
I'll go Cincy.
The Bubster, Bubby Brister, throws for 234, but the Bengals win 16-12.
Oh, wow.
Let's go to Foxborough.
Ugh.
Where the Patriots host the Kansas City Chiefs. JR.
Oh, that's a tough one. I'll take the Pats at home. Sure something went wrong. Ref, the camera went out, or the ball got tipped, something, I'm sure. Nonsense.
Peter?
Really, Rosero?
Kansas City. Steve DeBerg throws for 331 yards. Chiefs win comfortably, 37-7.
Stupid Patriots. Fuck them. Last time I picked them for anything.
Stephon Page, 151 yards receiving. Let's go up to the Kingdom in Seattle. The Seahawks host another Dome team, the Houston Oilers, Peter.
I'll go with Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take Houston too.
Warren Moon throws for 232, but the Seahawks win it in overtime, 13-10. Let's go to the Murph, Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego. The JETS, Jets, taking on the Chargers. JR.
I'll take the Chargers. Jets always burn me, whether I pick them or not, doesn't matter.
I got to go with San Diego as well.
Yep. Billy Joe Tolliver threw for 220. I was going to say Marion Butts, but it's Marion Butts. Rushed for 159 yards. Chargers win 38-17. to Mile High Stadium in Denver we go. The Broncos host the Los Angeles Raiders. Peter.
I don't bet against Bo Jackson from the year that they made the ratings for Tecmo Super Bowl, so Raiders.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Well, he rushed for a $117. Raiders win 23-20. Let's go to the hole in the roof down in Big D. The Cowboys host the New Orleans Saints, JR.
I'll take your Cowboys, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Peter?
I think the Cowboys did win that one.
Oh, my God. The fact you can actually remember this. See, this
no,
is unfair.
I remember it because it was going to come down to a tiebreaker with the Cowboys and the Saints.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, the Cowboys won 17-13.
Hey, he didn't pick them. That's a DQ.
Oh, sound like he did.
I picked the Cowboys.
It's an NA.
Cowboys were 7-9, and they needed all right, whatever. To lose. Why do I have to relay this? Chris Golo should be the one.
Well, I'm trying not to tip
it. It's all rigged.
Okay.
We have the fucking almanac in front of you or some shit.
We didn't get to the big injury.
Are you watching like the
really
NFL films year in review
really
right now?
I wish one of these NFL seasons had a tie in it.
I know, right? We never get the week with a tie. All right, let's go out to the desert to Tempe. The Cardinals host the Indianapolis Colts, Peter.
Peter's gone first like four times in a row, I feel like.
No, you picked Dallas first the last game.
Yeah, you're right.
Boy, this is a terrible game. Were they the Phoenix Cardinals? Yeah, Phoenix.
They were. That's what I said. Yep, Tempe. Not that it mattered. But
I'll go with the Cardinals, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Who cares? Give me them.
Well, Jeff George is quarterbacking the Colts. That should tell you something. Cardinals win 20-17. Let's go to the Metrodome in Minneapolis. The Vikings hosting Green Bay, JR.
I'll take Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota.
Who's this guy Dilweg for the Packers? Dilweg?
Isn't that where Kevin Kelly lives?
Oh, Anthony Dilweg. He was Don Mikowski's backup, and probably why they traded for Brett Favre.
Yeah, well, he threw for 172, but the Vikings won 23-7. Then on Monday night at the Stick.
Hey, guy, who did Peter pick? It sounded like you said Green
Minnesota.
Bay.
A Monday night at
sounded
the
like
Stick.
Green Bay to me.
The defending world champion, San Francisco 49ers, hosts the New York Football Giants. Peter.
Did they play every week on Monday Night Football? I feel like this is the ninth time we've picked this fucking game.
Well, they were the world. They were the two-time world champion, so probably.
They were the Orton Cena of the NFL at the time.
The Giants and
Niners. So that game was in San Francisco. I will go with the 49ers.
Yeah, me too.
Niners win 7-3. I remember that game very well.
All right, well, it was a good week for both of us, Peter, but you did extend the guest lead by one. It is now 49-43 with an 11-10 win. If this week doesn't prove that you guys have this thing rigged, I don't know what will. You inside jokes, you're cracking. Scott's letting you go first. You're not even picking the team. He's just saying you won. Fucking joke.
Meanwhile, he talks about deflated balls in the Chiefs game.
You're like, oh, I think Dallas may have won the game. Yep, Peter, Dallas won. Yep, you got that one. Yep.
Rosero, I'm gonna give you a hint on this going forward. The Patriots went 1-15 that year. I pretty much remember the one win, so it's pretty safe to pick against them.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Well, we'll see who does the house show in 2 weeks. Maybe you'll get a comeback in week 14 of the NFL season. All right, let's go to it is the day after Thanksgiving, so there is always some type of sports. Let us go to the NHL first, because there was a doubleheader at Old North Station. Both the Bruins and the Celtics were playing each other on this The Bruins and Celtics were both playing on this night. It wasn't a charity game, but the Jimmy Fund. The Bruins played during the day, and they were taking on our other favorite team here at Place to Be Nation, the Hartford Whalers. Peter Winson, Bruins jumped out to a 3-0 lead after two periods. Your goals were scored by Ken Hodge, Glenn Wesley, and Wes Walls.
Oh.
Yeah, Wes Walls. Ray Bourque had a pair of assists, but in the third period, somehow, somewhere, a fucking collapse. Two goals by Ron Francis, two goals by Pat Verbeek. Whalers come from behind for a 4-3 win. And, of course, the big thing in that game was a 5-minute major on
John Carter. The pride of Woburn, Massachusetts.
There was a game misconduct. You know, Cam Neely got a 10-minute in that period for attempt to injure
He probably, it was probably attempt to murder, actually, and it was probably Alf Samuelson.
Yeah, probably. The other games on that day, Buffalo beat Edmonton, Detroit beat St. Louis, the North Stars beat Vancouver, Philly beat Toronto, and the Caps beat the Penguins. So that's in the NHL. In the evening, we put the parquet over the ice, and the Celtics came out for a game, taking on the Sacramento Kings, who were 1-9 at the time, and or 1-8. Celtics were pretty good, 8-2. Celtics get the win, 115-105. Wayman Tisdale had 28 for the Kings in the losing effort. Mr. Winston, there were how many in double figures? Let's see here. There were 6 in double figures for the Celtics on this night. Kevin McHale came off the bench for 21. Brian Shaw with 20 on 8 of 11 shooting. Reggie Lewis, don't cry, had 18 points. D. Brown had 14 off the bench. Kevin Gamble had 12. Robert Parrish had 10. And Larry Bird, who was really having the back problems at this point, just 9 points on 3 of 8 shooting. So, but the Celtics do win and move to 9-2. JR's beloved Hornets were taking on their other expansion team, the Heat, and in their second seasons, Heat won that game. The Lakers did not play on this night. Tom Chambers was the high scorer, 39 points, but Phoenix lost to the Nets. Quickly, early season standings, Celtics led the Atlantic, the Pistons led the Central, the defending world champions, Spurs led the Midwest, and the Blazers were 10-0 to start the season, 10-0. Incidentally, the Bulls' record after 12 games, 6-6.
Hey, like Red Auerbach said, it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
That is correct.
That's how you get help from the guy officiating the contest.
So there was a birth on this day, and somebody died on this day. We'll talk about both quickly. On this date, former Tennessee Titans wide receiver Nick Williams was born. He played at UConn, actually.
Okay.
But he is currently a free agent. So. And passing away on this date, November 23rd, 1990, one of the most recognizable authors in history, Mr. Roald Dahl, who died at the age of 74. For those that may not know his name, he was the guy who wrote the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator, of course, leading to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. He also wrote James and the Giant Peach. And he did write a James Bond screenplay for Honor Majesty's Secret Service. So Roald Dahl, one of the most well-known children's writers in the day, passed away at the age of 74. And that is your Pop Culture Corner. Back to the main event, JR.
All right. Me and Gene is with Bobby Heenan. Gene says Bobby's a marked man. Bobby's stumbling and bumbling. His voice is cracking. He's begging Gene for help. He begs and pleads as he's sorry. As Gene just stares at him. This is awesome. Just classic Bobby Heenan stooging. And Gene just played the straight man. I love this. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, nothing will ever top. Like, anytime you put those two guys on screen together, magic happens.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I love what context. Yeah,
yeah, and I love when Bobby wears that top that has brain and the big letters on the back. That's like one of my favorite Bobby outfits.
Mm-hmm.
Not counting, of course, the white tuxedo at WrestleMania 3, but when Bobby has that big brain on the back of his shirt, I was one of my favorite outfits. But yeah, the typical Bobby promo, it's awesome.
All right, a classic ad for Buddy Rose's Blow Away Diet. It's funny and it's you know, it's a mock ad, the commercial itself, but poor Buddy has really turned into a sloppy mess. And they're exploiting him quite a bit here for it. Obviously, he's going along with it. It gives him a push. But Vince is just – we've talked about it before, how him and Jesse and others have really gone in on the fat shaming on poor Buddy. And it's overshadowing his talent in the ring. He, to me, looked like Louis Anderson as Christine Baskets on Baskets here. This kind of with his hair makes it look like. But it's – you know, the mock ad sounds funny, but it does make you feel bad for Buddy.
I appreciate Buddy Rose. I watched some of his stuff in Portland. And thinking back, I did not get this as a kid. Like, I knew that it was a send up of those, you know, weight loss commercials that you still see today.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's anything that Vince McMahon should not be allowed to do, well, actually, there are a lot of things he should not be allowed to do. But one of those things should definitely be carefully curated satire, because it's just not funny. Like, I don't know. It just missed the mark. Maybe do I just have too much love and respect for Buddy Rose? I don't know. I just did not see this as anywhere near what comedy should be.
I mean, the only thing you could say is it is memorable. They do bring it back much later. Is it an old, like, Slammies or something in, like, the 90s? They brought it back as, like, a modern thing. It was weird. I want to say it was, like, one of the 96 or 97 Slammy Awards. They show it. They show the ads, and they act like it's something new. It's odd. But it is memorable. But, yeah, it's sad to see him in this state.
Yeah, it is rough. I mean, obviously, he's going along with it. He's not behind his back or anything. Obviously he's taking the paycheck, but it is kind of sad. Vince, you know, he has no problem making fun of anybody's lack of, you know, exercise plan.
It would actually kind of be funny if it was behind his back and, like, Buddy Rose, like, went to his grave in 2009, not knowing that that this was all like a bit.
That's sad. It's unfortunate, but
hell of a worker.
All right, final match of the night is the Strike Force feud reignited. The long-forgotten Strike Force blow-off is here as Rick Martel takes on Tito Santana, the SummerSlam 90 match that wasn't. Santana charges out. Martel jumps him with the bell, balls him with some offense before shoving Tito to the floor. Martel heads out. Tito runs him into the post. Piper says Martel doesn't like to get hurt. He's an evasive wrestler. Tito works the arm in the ring, keeps outpacing Martel, stomping him in the face. Martel goes to the throat to take over, hooks a chin lock. Tito reverses that to a hammer lock, but Martel swarms him, takes over with some strikes. Martel spikes Tito to the mat, hits a backbreaker. Martel heads up top, and then he thinks about it, comes back down for another backbreaker, now goes up again, and he's shaky, and Tito catches him and crotches him. Martel tumbles into the ring. Tito unloads with kicks and punches. The flurry rolls on as the crowd is fired up. Tito's comeback is on point, as always, including a real nasty backbreaker. Tito heads to the rope and hits a flying clothesline for two. Tito shrugs off an atomic drop, goes to the figure four, but Martel blocks it with a small package. Tito pops up. Martel double leg scoops him into a Boston Crab, and Tito taps out for the loss. Strike Force blow-off is complete. Martel wins clean. A fun match. It was a little slow in spots, but Tito's comeback was awesome. He's really been on a roll in 1990. He's had some really nice showings. Martel needed that win for his big feud with Jake. And I think there's some Mandela effect with this feud, because it's always one that's held up there. It's like, oh, they never had a blow off. Strikeforce never had a blow off. They've actually, or never had a singles match even, but they have fought a few times in here, whether it's on Survivor Series teams or on Saturday's main event. They had a match in 89 and now here. So they have actually had a bunch of matches, and you could say this is pretty much it. I know they'll cross paths like in a rumble here and there, but Martel pretty much wins, you know, gets the solo win clean over Tito to put that feud to bed, Peter. So I'm 2.5 stars.
I was so excited for this match because, you know, yeah, there definitely is a Mandela effect thing. And they have a match, like, on TV in 89 on Saturday Night's Main Event. Mm-hmm. They have this one here, and then they have, I think there's a match on Challenge in, like, early 91 at some point. But,
and they're also, in 89, they were against each other in Survivor Series. There's a bunch of different little spots where they pop up and get to feud. But this one really felt like a true finish to the feud that many feel that we actually never got. But here it is.
It did. I do want to mention that there are a lot of wrestlers now who are utilizing Cameo as a source of income. Tito Santana cameos are only $25. Because that guy is a friggin' man of the people, and it's by far the best value of any wrestler on there. Personally, though, I'm waiting for Sid to come back on there. It says temporarily unavailable, but that's a problem for another time. But Martel's clearly on to Jake at this point, because they're referencing that feud in the commentary. And did they even say the word Strike Force once? Or
no,
reference
I don't think
it?
So.
Yeah, it that's how far removed we are. One thing that I noticed, and I don't know why I didn't pick up on this on any of the earlier matches, there were a lot of female fans opposite hard camera. It was like the exact opposite of watching a WWE pay-per-view these days. Well, that and the fact that, you know, that there were fans, but that they were mostly female. I mm-hmm. thought that there was a woman with like a beehive hairdo. I thought that was great. Martel at this point, he's finally figured out how to be a heel. It took him so long to get there. But in terms of just like the little things of healing it up during the match, the guy had been like a super baby face for so long that you kind of got to excuse it and give him a little bit of time while he, you know, kind of works his way through it. The counter of the atomic drop into the figure four, I jumped out of my chair at that spot. And very rarely do I do that these days with my advancing age. But it was kind of shocking to me to see such a clean win. But if you are going to do that, I mean, Tito at this point is so sort of bulletproof. I don't want to say bulletproof because he's not even really high enough on the card for it to matter. But you give Martel a clean win here on the heels of him with his whole team surviving at Survivor Series. And Scott, I love this. I gave it 3.5 stars. Maybe it was just that one spot that I just freaked out for. But Scott, it was a sad day earlier on in this show for Warrior Wildness. And in this match, it was a sad night for Ariba Dirce, as the Ultimate Warrior called it at Survivor Series. Yeah.
Yes. 2.5 stars. Your match time was, 6:46. So good little sprint. I am glad that we, regardless whether this feud is also dated, at least we do get a documented television match to end it. And Tito does what he does best, putting over the talent, and Martel needed to. He's had a hot couple of days. He's had a good 48 hours. His team was perfect, no pun intended, and gets the win here. So nice job. And Martel is ready to move on to 1991. And again, I agree with you guys 100%. Vince and Piper don't even remember Strikeforce, apparently. There's only so much history that WWF will acknowledge in 1990. Nothing from 88 or even 89, apparently. And we're all on to Jake, and we'll mention Jake. We'll talk about Jake in a second. This is just a good, you know, loose ends show to kind of finish stuff off. Slaughter and Nikolai and DiBiase and anything, and you know, and this feud. So this was a good you know, bow tire as we head into the holiday season, to wrap stuff up and get started on some new things. So the match is fine, good spots. Tito does his job, and Martel is looking pretty good. 2.5.
I will be fair to Piper, though. Strikeforce's existence was basically the whole time that Piper wasn't there. So
true.
I'll give him a pass.
Although he was there for the big breakup, so.
Well, yeah, but he was busy backstage glad-handing with Morton Downey Jr.
That's true. Smoking some cigarettes. Gene is with Jake the Snake and Damien. We get clips of his issues with Rick Martel. Jake has shades on, says his other senses are now acute. Martel is truly blind, blind to the fact that he has no teammates now. Survivor Series is over. Martel rolled the dice and came up snake eyes, and Jake reveals his fucked up eye. So that was a pretty good promo there.
I love the contact lens. It's awesome. This one's a little more, you could tell that they took attention to detail, because this, I like the contact lens when the glasses came off in the promo, was like completely white. Here you can kind of see Jake's pupil or irises. So they're even selling the fact that the eyeball is slowly healing,
right?
I suppose.
Yeah, they ramp it down a bit as we go.
They ramp it down a little bit. So I thought it was cool, Peter.
I like that they have attention to detail for that, but still put Earl Hebner in the freaking first match
after they show the clip.
Reference a twin referee angle involving the same guy. I am constantly distracted by the fact that there's a payphone in the background of that little locker room set that they have for Saturday Night's Main Event now.
Yes.
Like, I know that payphones were necessary back in those days, but why is it in the locker room?
I gotta make an emergency call, get a, you know, coffee or something. I don't know.
Oh my God, somebody stabbed Bruiser Brody. I mean, that kind of thing would have saved him.
Yes.
All right, we get clips of Randy Savage's attack on the Warrior from earlier. Mooney is then with the Warrior, and what he holds in his hands may represent the title to Savage, but also represents the bond between him and his Warrior. Savage tried to break that bond. He saw tears in the Warrior's eyes. He saw nothing but rage, which Savage will see. And again, kind of weird. We're seeing a very subdued Warrior here post-Thanksgiving. Maze is full, so tryptophan settling in.
But it would have been good. It would have been good if he didn't start like basically crying. It was like that time Backlund started crying because yeah. Graham ripped up the title. It's like a sign that you're on your way out as WWF champion. When the WWF champion starts crying, you know he's losing the belt soon.
Very sad. Piper and Vince to wrap us up. And it's kind of odd how, outside of Jake's promo, we really didn't get any mention of Survivor Series. So I know this was taped, and they would have had to obviously even do the the commentary pre-recorded before. They weren't going to do it that day to air that night. So I know this was all canned. But you think they would have worked in some perfunctory references like, what a night at Survivor Series last night. Or, you know, it was great to see. They knew who was going to win, right? So Warrior, you know, survived the grand finale. Like, they don't mention it at all. It's like it did not exist the night before.
Yeah. Did you get a load of Axe's fucking hair last night? Oh, my God.
Like, give me something. It's just, it's so weird. It's like it just did not even happen the night before.
Axe is gone.
But that has been a common thread with these Saturday Night's Main Events and main events too, sometimes where they exist in their own universe. We've talked about that quite a bit.
Well, and two things. Number one, I think the weird thing here is, I mean, no Hogan, but we've had that before, so that's not a big deal. But no one even mentions Taker. Like, not even.
Yeah,
just,
true. Yeah, that too.
I had the debut last night. Holy cow. Kind of like not even a mention. You know what I mean? So well, that's weird.
That might be for the best because they taped him for TV as Kane the Undertaker, but on the pay-per-view, he's presented as just the Undertaker. So They hadn't quite settled on what to call him. So I'm okay with them not mentioning him at this point. There's plenty of time for him later. Oh, 30 true. Years.
That's true.
All right, let's hit our awards. I think it's a pretty easy call for Match of the Night tonight and with Boss Man versus Perfect. Actually, no, Peter, I guess you were.
I went with Martel and Tito I jumped out of my chair.
Scott, what do you got?
I like the opener. I'm going to go with the opener.
Oh, this extra writing.
Wow. Three.
Three different choices often, on a night of three matches. That's really rare.
I kind of like the drama of the slaughtered Nickel. No, I'm okay.
All right. Cousin Junior. Well, it's unfair for me. My lowest rated. I had the opener in the last match tied. And because of the stakes are lower, I went Tito Martel, which feels awful to even have to write. So I'm just going to put Slaughter versus Volkov, even though it wasn't a match. Fuck him. That's what it is.
But it went to a no contest.
Yeah. I can't, in my right mind, put Tito and Martel as the worst match of the night. No. You guys, you just want to all go with that?
Oh, no. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Andre the Giant Award. I thought Bobby Heenan had a great night. It was close for me. I almost put him down, but I went with Macho King. The attack was awesome. His promo work was good. And this was a real key elevation point in his climb toward becoming a main eventer again.
I'm going with Buddy Rose for selling that tremendous commercial. No, I'm only kidding. Savage. I mean, he hit the gas tonight and is full speed ahead. Definitely.
Yeah. I thought about going with Martel just cause I thought he was so great in that match, but like I said, Savage is enhancing stuff when he's only tangentially involved, and this is now setting up the big world title program going forward.
And you get the continuation of your Savage DiBiase relationship too.
So exactly, that I love so much.
All right, Frenchie Martin.
I'm gonna write like a PhD thesis on that someday, and it's gonna be rejected. But I don't care. I'm still gonna run around calling myself Doctor.
All right, Frenchie Martin Award for the worst worker of the night. I went Nikolai Volkov, and I am submitting as we reach the end of 1990 that we rename this award from the Frenchie Martin Award to the Bolsheviks Award. I guess him and Boris have cleaned up in 1990. Do you guys stand with me in that change?
I'm looking at that too. Yeah,
I'm fine with you naming it in honor of National League pitcher running the bases, Nikolai Volkov.
All right. Do you guys agree with him as the worst tonight?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
All right. Best moment, I went with the Savage's attack on the Warrior, obviously.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, definitely. He was awesome. Yep.
All right. The Warrior Award for the most gassed up dude of the night. I went with the Warrior. I actually don't usually go with him on this award. I usually find someone else, but he stood out among his peers tonight as the biggest.
Yeah, that's back-to-back NBC appearances for him winning, but there really wasn't anybody else that was really jacked up tonight. Mm-hmm. Usually even Martel, who usually looks good, was not as in that kind of shape as Warrior was. Really, it was nobody else. So, yeah.
I almost want to look at Perfect because he got a boss man for that Perfect Plex. But I think that was to justify him being able to do the move in WrestleFest to boss man.
Yeah,
the Warrior is the most juiced up guy for sure.
All right, and finally, a Rooster Award for the worst hair. I went with poor Buddy Rose looking like Christine Baskets. His hair was a mess.
Yes. Guy went through too many hair matches in Portland, clearly.
Yeah.
All right, final grade. I thought it was an above-average main event. It was a quick show. They got a lot done. It wasn't as big as the previous main events, right? 88, 89 were huge. 90 was pretty big. But or I should say February 90. But this... For where it's jammed in the night after pay-per-view, they got a lot done. We had the big moment for Savage. We had Slaughter continue to get elevated. We had the blow-off to Strikeforce. We had the kickoff to the Boss Man Perfect feud. It was a nice tight hour. A lot got done. So I went 6 out of 10. I thought it was a very solid episode.
Well, let's see. The last one we did was a 7, the one in October, and that show was really good.
I can't compare main events to Saturday Night's main events. To me, those are different. Yeah. I went 4.5 on that
shorter.
One.
They're shorter. Yeah.
It's different goals, right? So for the main event back in February,
I did 5.
You went 5. I went 5.5. Peter, you went 3.5. You really didn't like 3.5. That one.
Yeah. I was not a fan of James Buster Douglas.
Or John Johnson, apparently. John Johnson had the worst hair. Who's worse, John Johnson or Buddy Rose? Yeah, no, this was solid. It served its purpose, even with a night with no Hogan. Warrior needed to be the spotlight as well as Savage. 6.5.
I went 6.5 also. It seemed like there was something. I don't know why I'm saying this. There was something lacking because I was entertained and it went by very, very quickly. You only have 3 real matches and they had the decency to basically have the Volkov thing be a non-match rather than making us suffer through 3 minutes of that, give that time to Martel, you know, split it out amongst the other matches. So, I mean, yeah, 6.5. I mean, it's definitely not the most memorable one there ever was, but if you sit down and watch it, it's not like you're going to be like, oh, I wasted my time, wasted 45 minutes.
No, not at all. It's almost a forgotten main event, too. It's definitely forgotten to time, I think, in many ways. I mean, you always just think of the kind of the big three. You forget about this one late in 90. You almost forget about that perfect boss man match. DiBiase gets a title shot. I think it's probably not one that jumps to most people's mind when you think of this series.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth a watch for sure, Peter, like you said.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely.
All right. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with the November 90 house show. And it is the finale of this week of shows for the Dirty F. We'll have a brand new guest joining us. He is a very long time OG of PTB, but it's the first time on the Place to Be podcast. Well, actually, we should couch that like we do many times. He's been on before, just never done like a Vintage Vault with us for a full episode.
Right.
So you've heard him in a few different spots. So we're looking forward to that. Also coming this week, we have a brand new Wrestling War Zone over on the North-South Connection feed. Me and Chad looking at the April 1st, 96 week of wrestling. It's a very big Monday Raw, obviously, the night after WrestleMania. And interesting. And Nitro. Also had a new From Montreal to Memphis drop earlier today. Aaron and Reg broke down the mental state of Bret Hart post screw job, and even beyond Bret, just kind of the ripple effect of the screw job throughout wrestling history. Tomorrow, or as you listen to this today, on Tuesday, have a new episode of TNA Never Dies with pay-per-view number 3. That's me, Aaron, and Jenny going through that. Wednesday, of course, you always get your Chad show. I believe this week will be a Carolina Dreamin', and Saturday, as always, should be a new No Holds Barred. So get subscribed to the North-South Connection podcast feed. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/North-South Connection, and also subscribe and leave some feedback for us, too. Peter, what do you got going on?
Well, greetings from Allentown. Thursdays, this Thursday, this is actually the first time I'm announcing it, doing the March 7th, 88 Superstars, which apparently Scott Criscolo was in attendance in New Haven, Connecticut for that one. It's got the last appearance of Outback Jack, which, you know, there's probably a flood in the New Haven Coliseum with tears. And Steve Blackman is there for some reason as well.
Yeah, little do we know.
Which is kind of funny.
That was before he got malaria or whatever in Africa, right? Like derailed his whole career.
Yes.
And I've been doing a little side project with my pal Keithy, GFA Live, where it's just kind of a live watch program. And this past week, we watched a Thunder from February of 2000. And we made it through it. And Keithy did a couple of attempts at Steiner math that certainly popped me good. So that usually comes out over the weekend. And of course, the main show, Greetings from Allentown, on Thursdays. So give me a follow at GF Allentown Pod on Twitter, even though social media is horrible and is given our society a corrosive effect.
On the Place to Be Wrestling Network, a busy week as well. Of course, this show is here. On Tuesday, we will have the newest episode of the Great Debate Wrestling version. Andy was with me, Logan Crosland, and Mr. Groomberg. Fun and games and frivolity from there. So look forward to that. It's a lot of fun. Our good man, Mr. Zani, will have, hopefully, as he was saying, the next episode of Row One, Seat One. Main event is this week. Me, Nate, and Steve. We will break down whatever the hell happened Sunday night at Backlash and talk about New Japan as they're starting to ramp up shows again at a limited capacity. And some more GWCW matches to talk about as well. This weekend on the NWA Saturday special, the Doctor and I will continue our Mount Rushmore series with one of not only Dr. G's, but one of your favorite guys, JR, the man himself, the son of a plumber, baby, Dusty Rhodes. We'll talk about Big Dust this weekend. And also a new episode of Talkin' WCW will drop this Saturday as well. Not sure who Jenny, Tim, and Greg will have as their topic, but look forward to that. That'll drop on Saturday. So a big, big busy week on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. Check it out.
I just want to mention too, the newest Body Press Your Luck will be out this week as well. So the June installment, and you know, it's been a haul trying to get some contenders to Ryan Everett, but I'm confident that this month will bring us a very good challenge. So tune in.
Yes, no, looking forward to that. Always looking forward to Body Press Your Luck on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. And we want to announce, because I told Mr. Atherton we do it on the Mothership, the next theme for the next tournament on the PTBN tournament Facebook page is greatest song on a soundtrack. So movie songs. And that's not just songs.
Not just scores. It's actual
not just scores, but yeah, songs that were big in movies. So we could, like, you know, old time rock and roll, Risky Business, etc., etc. Plenty of Saturday Night Fever, plenty of Bee Gees, you know, Star Wars, other stuff, Forrest Gump.
Peg. Yep.
Peg. Yep. So that'll start in the next couple weeks. So the next tournament topic is song from a soundtrack. So that should be a fun tournament. Congrats to Doritos. Nacho cheese Doritos.
Wrong Doritos, but fine.
I agree with you.
Yeah, yes.
I love both. I love both. So I was good with either that or Cool Ranch. Love both. But the fact that they I was kind of thinking that the Double Stuff Oreo was going to win. So
I'll tell you, there's people out there that don't like chocolate.
I think so. And there's other people who wonder, why didn't just regular Oreos move on? Why did the gimmick Oreos?
Well, I mean, I'd rather go Double Stuff over the regular ones. The more cream, the better.
They should just get rid of the regulars and make the Double Stuffs the regulars.
Well, then they're not special anymore. So.
Well, then they could just make one with more cream.
It always felt like a bigger deal when someone had the Double Stuff. Like, holy shit, you paid for the Double Stuff. You know, you got to keep it affordable, too. So. All right, that'll do it. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, I'm going to stay safe, stay healthy, and talk to you guys. Take care. We'll be right back.